hell that I was in, I'd do anything to be better.
I thought like a lunatic.
You kind of just have like that little bit of hope that it will get better.
You're gonna make it.
This began my surrender.
I am a witness of my own growth.
It's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and I just have to say, it works if you work it.
My story, that's what I share.
You're listening to Far From Finished, a weekly podcast where we share new, real-life stories of hope and triumph, told by the people who live them. Today's story comes to us from...
You know, it's hard to say why I started using. Came from a pretty good family. You know, the general conception about drug addiction is that you came from a broken home or you were somehow abused or neglected as a child. And I don't think I could really say that I was any of those things. I don't feel that I was abused. I don't feel I was neglected. I had both of my parents growing up. They lived together and both raised me together. That being said, it always just for some reason felt like I had something missing. And even though I had a good upbringing, I would say that the easiest way to put it was one day I tried alcohol and I just liked it. And it just seemed to fix that little hole that was inside me, you know? Again, grew up in a nice suburban neighborhood with a very supportive, good upbringing from all my family members. And when I just found alcohol, it just seemed to work. It's hard to explain. So I'm a big proponent of the fact that I have always suffered from addiction, even much before I ever picked up a drink or a drug. And essentially that progression continued on from alcohol to other substances. And I'll get into that a little bit as my story goes on. But as far as why I started using, it's hard to say. One day I decided that it would be a good idea to try it, I guess because other people were doing it. And for me, it worked. And then I found myself doing it when they weren't doing it. And, you know, it just kind of ramped up, as my story will certainly show. So I can't point to one reason besides the fact that I like the way drugs and alcohol make me feel.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
What did your using look like during, like, the grade school years?
So the first time I had a sip of alcohol, now a lot of people talk about that first sip. Alcohol was very prevalent in holidays. I was raised by two Jewish parents, and we celebrated all the holidays and all that stuff. And so I know that at a very young age, like under 10, that I've had like a sip of wine here or there. I don't think that any of that contributed to where I ended up. But I will say that the first time I remember like getting like drunk and drinking was probably at the age of 12. So I was in middle school. I was probably about 7th grade. At the same time, it happened pretty quickly where I was drinking through my parents' liquor cabinets and the alcohol that they kind of had in the freezer and just kind of around the house. It happened kind of simultaneously with pot. So marijuana and alcohol kind of happened together. And as that progression went on, it built a pretty solid foundation in my life. By the time I was 14, I was kind of dabbling with selling some drugs, and that was kind of helping support the habit that I had. So I would sell just a little bit so that I would have a little bit. You know, some of my friends had older brothers and sisters that would kind of help us out when we needed some help getting, you know, alcohol or cigarettes or whatever. I mean, but that's kind of how it started off. And as it progressed through high school, you know, not only did the drugs progress, but the involvement of selling drugs kind of progressed. And those two things really went hand in hand through the whole time that I used, or at least through college. And I kind of started to see not just an opportunity to do drugs for free from selling them, but to also make money and do other stuff that I wanted to do that teenage kids wanted to do but didn't have the money to, or that, you know, my parents didn't give me money the way other parents gave their kids money to do stuff. So I kind of found that as a way to support myself. And so through the high school years of my using, my business increased, and I had more and more people kind of come to me looking for, you know, different drugs, and it went from quickly from, you know, marijuana to I started to kind of dabble in, like, mushrooms were the next thing. And from mushrooms, I kind of went to pills, and that was right around 16. So mushrooms were like 14, 15. And then by the time I was 16 years old, it was pills, it was cocaine, and it was fairly regular. Marijuana, alcohol certainly were regular. Pills and coke would be like weekends, maybe sometimes during the week, and that quickly progressed into an everyday thing where I was just finding a way to get my hands on some cocaine and picking that up for friends, doing my portion for free, you know, essentially selling that by the time I was 17 and getting ready to go away to college. And, you know, I got through high school by the skin of my teeth and, you know, made it into a college, and it was interesting because I chose a college based on what the party scene was like and not necessarily what any of the academics were like, which actually, interestingly enough, the school I chose had a pretty good academic scene and a pretty good party scene, so it ended up working out for me. But by the time I graduated high school, that went from smoking some pot at 12, drinking at 12, to 17, I had a vicious cocaine habit. I had a cocaine habit, I had a pill habit, not any specific pill, I just did them if they were there, and a pretty legitimate cocaine habit moving into college. So that's kind of what it looked like during the grade years, the grade school years.
When did you realize that, man, I got a problem?
Well, I don't think I ever saw it that way in high school. In high school, I saw it more as like, you know, I was depressed, so I used drugs, and that helped me to kind of socialize. I saw it more as I was anxious, so I used drugs, so it helped to settle me down. Or I saw all these other problems, my parents, my friends, my teachers, the schoolwork, everything else was the problem. Not me. I didn't have a problem. Everybody else had a problem. And the drugs were kind of able to put those problems aside. And I was able to look at it like, you know what? This works. Like, these drugs that they talked about being so bad kind of make everything happy. And all the other people who are a problem, I don't care about them when I take drugs, you know? So I don't think it was really until college, you know? What college kind of looked like, that's when I started to kind of think, you know, there might be a problem, but I didn't know how to address it. I didn't know of any way to kind of combat the problem besides just try to stop, and I was incapable of doing that. No matter how hard I tried to stop, I couldn't, or even limit it. Like, I couldn't go one day without anything from the age of 14 on. I could not go one day without drugs. It was probably around the end of my freshman year of college. Because I specifically remember saying, well, if I graduate, I still got 4 years. So 4 years from now, there's no way I'll still be doing this stuff. And then that theme progressed into, you know, sophomore year, I'd say, well, there's still 3 years, there's no way. And then, you know, junior year, oh, there's still 2 years. And then by the time I'm like getting ready for graduation, I'm taking just slugging Jack Daniels, running back to my car to go sit at graduation. And, you know, I'll talk about college a little bit because I don't even know how I got through that. But I think that when I actually realized I had a problem, that was probably around freshman year of college, because it was just all day, every day. Wake up, get high all day, do my best to attend classes, and it kind of started to creep into my mind, but I didn't know how to do it, so I just used more drugs to kind of push it a little bit further back and into my mind, or I didn't have to think about it. That's when it...
Did the fact that you figured out, you mentioned you could sell the stuff, you could make some money,
mm-hmm.
Did by having more access to the drugs by selling it, do you think that also fueled your drug, your addiction, or your habits, or...
You know, I do. I do to an extent. I think that it enabled it to go on longer. Specifically. So, you know, the more I used, the quantities got more, and I had easy availability. Everything that I used, because at that point it became, very early in college, it became specifically prescription painkillers, OxyContin, you know, antidepressants, Xanax, those were the go-to, coupled with drinking and smoking just a ton of pot. Those four things, that was like the ultimate cocktail for me, and it's scary, actually. You know, I like kind of laugh, but that's from the other side. Like, looking back to that person that was doing that, it was an extremely dangerous combination that went on for the entire time during college. Now, the selling part that I talked about being a huge part of it, absolutely, I think, fueled to it, but also, and again, enabled it to go on a little bit longer than, I don't know if it was maybe, it would have, I would have gotten clean sooner, I'm not sure, but I will say that I didn't have to scrape up ways to get money to support my habit. I was easily doing $300-$500 worth of drugs a day, and it wasn't a problem. You know, I was definitely involved with some people that I would not hang out with today, that's for sure. But some of the drug dealing took me into, you know, I was living in right outside New York City. So I was ended up in New York City with people that I guess you could say shouldn't be hanging around with, selling very high quantities of drugs and dangerously, very, very foolishly and dangerously commuting back and forth from Queens to Long Island to Brooklyn to Manhattan, you know, and back to where I was living in Long Island. And it was definitely a very hazardous lifestyle. And somehow I can't think of it any other way than I was just being watched or blessed from something unworldly, because I was so foolish and so high all the time to be carrying around these quantities of substances that I would probably, well, most certainly still be sitting in jail today. No doubt in my mind. Quantities that there's no questions asked that you get put away for multiple years, you know. And so I was being watched. I don't know if it's necessarily God or angels or the universe, or maybe it just wasn't my time, but to get back to the original question, it definitely fueled what I was doing to the point where I just never had to pay for drugs. It was just what I did. I sold them, I did them. Getting through college, a lot of people think, you know, it's funny, people will be like, oh, well, it couldn't have been that bad because you graduated from college. Well, it's easy to graduate when you have the entire 2006 class on your payroll, you know, or the 2010 class rather. So I had everyone on my payroll, like whether it was drugs or money, you know, paying for papers, paying people off in drugs, whatever it is. Like if we had an attendance grade, I would have somebody sign me in. And I'd get the grade for attendance. And if there was a paper due, I'd pay someone to write my paper. And if there was an exam or a test, I would pay somebody to let me cheat off of them. I rarely did my work. I would make sure that I was taking classes that had group projects. I'd make sure I was with the right groups, the people that I could, you know, kind of bribe, if you will, into helping me get the grades I needed to pass. And that is exactly what I did for 4 years, the whole time. I would dictate papers to people. Like, I would just get all whacked out on drugs and just talk. And I would have people legitimately sit there at their computer and dictate what I was saying and put it into papers and turn it in. I'd get a C or a C minus, and I'd be totally cool with that. Super cool. As long as it wasn't an F, I was okay with it. And that is just how I got by in college. It was legitimately unbelievable, you know, and I hurt a lot of people. You know, it seemed to me like a pretty extravagant lifestyle. I got to do what I want. I had a girlfriend at the time. I could buy her whatever she wanted, Gucci stuff, literally and metaphorically. You know, we could go out to dinners in Manhattan and get hotel rooms in Times Square and have all these awesome parties and hang out with really, well, who I thought were cool people, but probably dangerous people. But I hurt a lot of people along the way, man. And it ended up at a point where we weren't living in a great neighborhood. And where all this drug dealing ended up leaving me was, yeah, sure, it got me through school and it got me the drugs I needed to keep up my habit and buying all this cool stuff and having, I guess you could say, a great time in college. It ended up with me living with some friends who weren't into the same lifestyle as me. And we were robbed. One of the local gangs had picked up on the drugs that I was selling and watching our house and monitoring it. And essentially, we're not okay with that happening on, I guess you could say, their territory. And so one day I came home from work and the entire police department of the town we were living in was at my house. The whole street was just lit up with cop cars and I just thought they were coming for me and I was getting arrested. Well, it turns out that a group of armed, masked men broke into my home and beat up my roommates, took everything, all my drugs, all my money, all of their electronics, all of my electronics, everything in the house that had any value. They took all of it. They tied my roommates up, put them in a bathroom and locked them in while they took everything. And my roommates, this is just such a graphic image in my head, but they had to chew the zip ties off of each other's wrists to get out of their bondage in the bathroom on the second floor of the house we were living in. And it was very difficult for me because the cops knew. They knew what I was doing. They knew why the guys were there. They, you know, their MO is to take a kid like me, you know, 20 years old, trying to sell drugs and all this stuff in their territory, and essentially kidnap me and take me to my source for the drugs, and then they do whatever they do. And they said I'd have been lucky to survive an ordeal like that, and that I was lucky to not be home when they came in. And I wasn't, and I could guess you could say I was lucky, but it doesn't make me feel any better about what my roommates had to live through. Luckily, I've been able to clear up the wreckage of that situation with most of them, and I'm happy to say that I'm friends with a couple of those roommates today, but there are still a couple that won't talk to me. And that's at no fault to them. But
did that have anything to do with why you stopped using drugs, or was that
nope. Man, you know, a lot of stuff you would have thought happened. I mean, there was a St. Patrick's Day during school where I got blacked out, and the long and short of it is I drove my truck right up into some lady's house. You know, I did that. You know, I had this robbery happen. My girlfriend that I thought I was so in love with, she left me. I was homeless I was 2.5 months from graduating, and based on that robbery that happened, I was evicted from the home, and so I was living in the back of like a 2001 Toyota Camry on the cold streets of Hempstead, New York, trying to graduate, like living in a car, you know, and you thought that might add to it, or running the truck through somebody's house, or all the extravagance that I thought I was, you know, Scarface or, you know, Tony Montana or something like that, and having that all taken away. And no, man, it didn't have anything to do with me stopping. I was actually still about 3 years away from stopping after that robbery. I graduated. I kind of explained that, but I graduated and moved back in with my parents in a suburb of Philadelphia and began bartending in the city, in Philly. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's good money. It's fast money. Money available to be stolen, you know, and it happened, and I did that, and it's nothing I'm proud of, and it's nothing that I look back and say that I'm proud to say that I did these things, but I would show up and start drinking at 4 or 5 o'clock, and I'd work into the wee hours of the morning, 2, 3 a.m., and just drink the whole taking shots. I would make sure that I had pills for the whole night, you know, and I would just be doing pills all night long behind the bar, drinking all night. People would be buying me drinks, no big deal, and I did that for about a year, just drinking my face off, taking all the pills. Every dollar that I spent went to drugs, period. I lived with my parents. They kept food in the house. I ate their food. I lived in their house. I put gas in my car, and I bought drugs. That's what I did with my money. I drank for free because I worked behind a bar. And I did not charge myself for those drinks. But I did have the audacity at the end of my shifts to go into the main bar and ask for my employee drink, because everyone gets a drink as an employee at the end of the night. And then, yeah, man, and then I would drive home 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning from the city of Philadelphia over the bridge into South Jersey, where I was staying with my parents, and drive just completely obliterated. It's just a miracle that I didn't get pulled over or crash. It is just an ongoing miracle that I'm alive and not behind bars. It's unbelievable. It really is, especially now, like, because I don't get into my story in this much detail very often, if at all, at this point in my recovery. Talking about it, it is truly nothing short of a miracle that I'm alive and free today, you know? So it didn't have anything to do with me stopping, but,
So why did you stop?
I stopped because, well, I went to my first treatment center, and the reason I stopped that time was simply because I was out of money. There was nothing left to steal, and I was out of money. The drugs I were taking got too expensive for me to afford. I lost my job at the bar. I was unemployed. I couldn't afford anything. So I went to treatment to bail myself out of that situation. There I learned that maybe I do want to be clean. And I left wanting to be clean. I wanted to be clean for the rest of my life. I did not want to go back to the drugs. But the disease of addiction is cunning, baffling, and powerful, as they say. And I experienced that because 2 days after I got out of treatment, I wanted nothing more than to never use again. And I went back to it. And I went back full force. I found some new drugs. I became your unfair image of what a drug addict is. It's unfair because drug addicts are anybody, but it's just the image that's been created in the media and in the public. I was a low-bottom drug addict that was walking around the streets of Camden, New Jersey, in the hood, sticking needles in my arm, and became a full-blown heroin addict, smoking crack, shooting heroin, smoking PCP, and that was it. It was those three things, mainly heroin. Heroin brought me to my knees. There was nothing else, man. I didn't care about anything else. I found new ways to acquire money about through stealing and things of that nature. And again, nothing that I'm proud of, but I kept that going for a little while. I AMA'd, so I went against medical advice and ran away from three more treatment centers that I ended up at for no other reason than to try to get myself out of trouble, but realized I didn't really want to, so, or at least I didn't want to stop using, so I ran away from those facilities, and I went on my final run right before New Year's Eve, 2011. I actually was able to get myself clean, and through my dad, actually scored, like, looking back on it, a dream job, becoming a partner at a financial advisory firm. They were up and coming, and these two guys started the firm, and based on my father's recommendation, gave me the job to be the third partner and to manage my own branch and built out my future in ways that I could never imagine. And again, the disease of addiction had me. It had me, even though I was clean for a couple months and I was working on my Series 7, which would allow me to buy, trade, and sell financial securities for other people and manage their money. Imagine that. Someone hired me to manage other people's money.
Was anybody aware of the shape that you were in? I mean,
it was like on and off because I would get myself cleaned up for enough time to save up enough money to go on a bender. And it was like these in-between periods of, well, you know, it seems like he's doing okay. So it was more of like this don't ask, don't tell, which is super dangerous. And my parents were hung up in that. They didn't want to talk about it because it angered me. It's just the nature of the disease. Like, don't talk about it. I don't want to hear it. I'm fine because I lie to myself and I believe that lie. I'm not an addict. I'm not doing it, even though I know I am. I'll tell you till I'm blue in the face that I'm sober, I'm clean, I'm not using any drugs, right? And that's just kind of how it was. And again, right before New Year's Eve of 2011, I relapsed after, having this dream job lined up. Getting it, my own office, my own desk, chairs on the other side of my desk for clients, a window with a view and a secretary, the whole nine. And I decided heroin was more important than that. And I went on a bender. And my no one really caught on to it right away. And after about 3 weeks, I was again sitting in the back of a cop car, and that's some of the stuff I skipped over in my story, but I had run into some issues of the law, with the law, from the age of 18 all the way up to, 23. And I got arrested, and it was a third offense charge, and I was facing some serious time in jail. It finally caught up to me. The only opportunity that I had to get out of that was to go to treatment, and I wasn't willing to do that at the very moment. So I went on a short run there for a couple days. I had gotten caught with some hypodermic needles and some heroin and caught a possession charge, but since it was third offense, they were going to lock me up. And for no other reason, why did I stop? Not to go to jail. I went to treatment. I went to a treatment center down in Florida so that I didn't have to go to jail, period. And I wasn't even ready to stop. I did it not to go to jail, and I was going to beat the charges and go back out using, you know. And so I would say that the reason I stopped was because of the policeman. And that just kind of led to all these other doors opening and all these other people being put on my paths. And I, look, you consider it what you want, okay? For me, it's God. For me, it's angels. For me, it's just God speaking through people to me and putting just the right people in my path at the right times for me to get some clarity. Because I thought like a lunatic. I always looked at you and how I could get an edge on you, how I could get your money, how I could be better than you, you know? I wasn't ready to get clean, and I just started hearing little pieces and bits of the message of recovery from people. And it went from me deciding, you know, I'm going to go down to Florida, I'm going to go to treatment for 28 days, go home, beat this case, getting high again, to I ended up staying in treatment for about 5 months. I stayed away from the environment that I was getting high in the Northeast, and stayed down south, and lived in a sober living environment beyond treatment for another six and a half months. I practiced a program of recovery in my life. I tried my best to clean up the wreckage of my past by making amends with the people that I had harmed. Not going to them and saying sorry, you know, because everyone knows I'm a sorry you know what, you know. It was more about finding out what I could do to make what I had done right again, right? When you mend something, you fix it. So what can I do to best try to fix this situation? And that's what I began to do. And that's how I started to become free. And I didn't just say I was in recovery, right? I didn't just claim to be or say that I was or just kind of show up and be in recovery. I acted like a person in recovery, like somebody who would be a functioning member of society, like somebody who had something to give, which now I realize I'm worth it because I just wanted to die, man. Another piece of the story that I'm just going to touch on briefly was suicide. Like, I tried to kill myself multiple times. I my parents, when I got down to that last treatment center in Florida, found a suicide note, and I had attempted suicide on an overdose. I tried to overdose myself on heroin by doing way more than I had ever done, and I overdosed and fell out, and I came out of it, I don't even know how long later, and I couldn't see in front of my face. Everything was white, and my dog was just barking in my face and scratching at my face with his paw. And I don't know how long I had been out, but I was pissed because I never wanted to wake up ever again. And I tried to end my life. And I wrote a suicide note and put it in my pocket. And my poor parents found that suicide note when I went down to treatment. I didn't get rid of it, I kept it. And when I went to treatment, they found it. And that was one of the most painful things that I had to go through, was them finding out. And today I have a son, and it's interesting because I could never imagine what they felt until I look into the eyes of my baby boy. And it's just the saddest thing to think about what I put my parents through, and to find a suicide note when all I want to do is provide my 3.5-month-old with what the bare necessities are for him to live, to think about me at 22 or 23 writing a note to my parents about how it's not their fault, but I had to do this. And it's just extremely sad, but it's a good thing it wasn't the last chapter in the book, because I'm sitting here talking now about how I've turned my entire life around, that a sister that wouldn't talk to me, it tells me on a regular basis that she looks up to me, that I'm an inspiration for her. I have people that come to me for advice on how to live their lives the way that I live my life. I have my parents that come to me asking questions. I have their friends coming to me about how I can help their kids and their friends and their nieces and nephews and friends of friends of friends. And it happens all the time. I help get people into treatment where they can get the help they need. I help people beyond treatment where they can continue to get the help they need. And when rubber meets the road, when you're back in the real world, there's more work to be done. And I help people do that too. And I have something to offer people in the world today. When I used to think that I was all alone in this world and nobody understood me, and all I wanted to do was die, but didn't have what it took to just kind of end it with, like, I don't know, like a gun or whatever you would think. I just tried to continue to use drugs to the max, trying to never wake up. And that used to be my prayer. God, please don't let me wake up tomorrow and slug back a fifth of vodka and wash it down with a bunch of pills and stuff like that. And today I say, you know, God, if it be your will to allow me to walk your earth again today, show me how I can be a maximum service to you and your children. And what I mean by his children is every man and woman who walks this planet, not just drug addicts and alcoholics, but anybody. And how can I help them to best serve your purpose, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Just way to start the day.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and that's what I try to do throughout the day. I feel like that service to others, it's ingrained in each and every one of us, and it's just tapping into that power. Because me on my own, I don't have the power to do that. You know, I don't have the power to help people. I have the power to find money, to buy drugs, to try to kill myself with them. That's what I do, left to my own devices. But when I tap into a different power, and again, this is just for me. It doesn't go for everybody, but for me, it's about God and doing God's work. And the God that I believe in is all love and no opposite, you know? And the God that I believe in gives us humans the power of free will. And we could use that free will to exercise peace in this world or disaster in this world. And I try to be on the peace side of that and try to do my best to not necessarily bring peace to the world, or that's not what this is all about, this talk or anything, but I try my best to be part of the solution and not the problem.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got a couple of questions here about your past. So if you could, you know, would you erase your past if you could go back in time?
No, that's the short answer. No, because it's shaped who I am today, and I think that that's kind of the next question too, is how has the past shaped me? And it kind of goes hand in hand. I think that I would not erase my past. And I think it's shaped who I am today, because without those life experiences, I wouldn't be able to help people in the capacity that I help them in today. My story is my most valuable asset. You know, I would have doctors talk to me, therapists, drug psychiatrists, my parents, my teachers, principals, police officers, probation officers, you know, corrections officers, all these different people who tried to get through to me. And it never worked. I didn't want to hear what they had to say. The only people that were able to get through to me were the ones who have walked the path that I walked. That was the most powerful thing I ever experienced, was a man who had no degrees, no letters after his name, no title, just a drug addict that found a way out and offered me a solution after telling me a little bit about his past. And for some reason, when I heard that he was some junkie, stealing, lying, cheating, suicidal, heroin addict just like me, but he looked like he had it together a little bit, I trusted him. Unbelievably, after all these years and all those people that tried to help and get through to me, best friends and girlfriends and all of that, like, it was him, a guy that I barely knew, who used to be a heroin addict like me, who used to be an alcoholic like me, who used to be a dope fiend like me. And he showed me the way, and for some reason, I trusted this man. So, going back to my past, I try to do the same thing that he did to me. I give that away freely to others, the same way he gave it away freely to me. He didn't charge me anything. He didn't ask me to give him anything in return. He asked me one thing, that when he gave me his message and showed me the way out, that I take my message and show others the way out in return. And that's what I try to do today. I use my past. It's shaped who I am today, and it's able to help show others how to get out of the same predicaments, the exact same predicaments that I found myself in. And it's the most powerful asset that I have in this world, is what I've just talked about here this afternoon.
And you can relate to those. You're in a position now where you can use your experience, right?
Yeah.
You touched on that. You must feel pretty good today, knowing that you can actually do something to help someone else. You can use, whether it's your story, your past, because there are people that you come across, that we come across daily, that are in the throes of addiction. You know, what do you say to those people that, you know, have lost their hope?
You know, it's interesting, because I've lost hope at a certain point as well. And sure, I come across people all the time, and it's heartbreaking, because you see folks with no hope that aren't willing to try a new way of life. But what I would say to them, what I do say to them is, well, it starts with my story, right? Because if you don't understand truly, if I can't get you to buy into the fact that I've been where you are, then I don't stand a chance at getting through to you. And, you know, it's an interesting concept, but I just do my best, and I hope that one person hears this today and gets a little bit of hope. But once I have somebody hooked on the fact that, look, I was there, man. Like, I was homeless 4 years ago. Today, I was walking the streets of in the hood trying to literally sell the shirt off my back for a bag of dope. And once somebody truly believes that I've been there, I can begin to share with them the solution and the message of recovery, which is essentially follow a few simple steps, get well, and help others, you know, and it'll change your life, you know. And that's really the main message, is my story. That's what I share with people today that struggle. You know, and I'll talk about my story to anyone, anytime, anywhere, in hopes that it will help one person. If I can help one person, you know, it means a lot. There's a quote that I like to live by, and, you know, it says that, you know, I might be just one person in the entire world, but I could be the entire world to one person. And if I could make that come true in any way, shape, or form, in regards to somebody turning their life around, and I have the I can bear witness to that, then I know that I've done something to change a life, including my own. Helping others helps me more than it probably helps them. But watching them turn their lives around are one of the most beautiful things in my life I get to see today. People that walk in with, just like you said, just beaten down with no hope. And then a year later, watching somebody that I don't even recognize celebrate the fact that they haven't used a drug or taken a sip of alcohol in a year.
It's awesome.
Yeah, totally.